Five, four, three, two, one.
I'm Austin bound, get my feelings checked at the door.
That's right, Texas has its own community-run Linux Fest on April 10th, 2010 in Austin, Texas. Go to texaslinuxfest.org for details. And remember, get your Linux on.
I'm Austin bound, get my eyes set on the price. The time is...
One, two, three...
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are looking bad. For the stream length, go direct to DLNGS.org. And the IC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Right, this is a Linux Link Tech Show, episode 339. I don't okay. Even know what episode we're at.
339.
It's some episode, and it's
well, you know, one of those numbers. It's not
it's
important.
The next one
February,
in the series.
Which is it's season one, episode
339.
Season three, episode 45.
And tonight we have a wonderful guest, Tara Spaulding from Groundwork.
Hello, hello.
How you doing
Yay!
Tonight, Tara?
Hi, Tara.
I am fabulous. Thank you guys for having me join you tonight. I'm really excited to be here. It's pretty awesome.
Well, obviously you haven't listened to us before then, right?
Well, she
sure
must
I
have listened
have.
To one episode because she knew about the Nagios alerts.
Right.
Unless she got one too from Marcia.
I know you guys run. Yeah. Exactly. I'm on the need to know list, so.
Cool.
So Tara, you work for a company called Groundwork Open Source. What exactly is that company?
Yeah, so Groundwork is an IT monitoring company. Clearly open source based, and we're really good at system and network monitoring. It's been around for 6 years now. And Groundwork, since it was founded in 2004, kind of did its own thing when it came to the open source approach. And what it does is combine a lot of different open source projects that do monitoring and also put in some open source code of our own to create an Uber monitoring product that we call Community Edition. And some of the projects that we amalgamate into the Community Edition is Nagios, and that's why I was kind of laughing about the whole alert thing, since we know that well. But, you know, we also pull in other projects as well, like our D tool. We amalgamate Cacti. And so it's a really neat, stable product. We just released 6.0 at the end of last year, and you know we're solving what's going wrong, you know, one alert at a time.
Now, since your company is built on open source products, they say that you cannot make any money on open source. Do you contest that?
Well, you know, yes, I think that's been the that's been the question that keeps on changing and moving, you know, forever. And we definitely do make money, but there's so many different business practices out there, and I think it is really depending on what does the product do, how is the product licensed, what other products are out there of similar stature from not only open source but also proprietary standpoint, because people who are buying, nobody cares as much as the origin or the protection of the code. They really care about ultimately what it's going to do for them, right? So, you know, it's is Groundwork competing against solutions like What's Up Gold or Tivoli, or is it competing, you know, against some other local, you know, app or basically somebody writing scripts? So, you know, there is definitely a business and making money when it comes to commercial open source. What we've done is created commercial versions of the application that has, you know, additional features and functionality. And I don't know if you go to our website, gwas.com, we actually have it for $49 for people to just try the more advanced product compared to the community edition. And, you know, we're hoping that we can prove, you know, we deserve the business if someone's willing to spend, you know, money on a monitoring solution. Well, then we've got a really easy entry product for you as well.
So what kind of, you said that there's a difference between the free version and the pay version. What exactly, what features are there that would
Oh, no, that's it's a great question, and we get it all the time. You know, there are definitely some additional features that are really geared towards more data center management as well as executive management, right? Community Edition is a really good product. It does a lot of, you know, fabulous functionality. It's pretty stable. But I would consider it to be like a very good system end tool. However, if you want to start selling it to managers, like, hey, look, you know, I see performance degradation and, you know, our data center over here, or I'm seeing packets lost over the network. Well, those are the sorts of things, because it's a much more business-oriented sort of need, that we put into the enterprise version. And so there's also things like security, integration with Active Directory, your one of your guys' favorite topic, because that's not easy to do. And we also have additional profiles that are like, hey, how do you monitor Oracle applications? Because it's not like Oracle makes things very easy to monitor. And having you know, pre-configured profiles, which are much more advanced than just, you know, plugins, you know, people will pay money for that. So, you know, I'm the marketeer at Groundwork, and it's my duty to make sure things are you know, priced right for the, you know, buyers, or white for the buyers, depending on how you want to look at it. And you know, basically get feedback from people as to what makes sense and what doesn't make sense from packaging. So I'm always listening and watching what, you know, other people are asking for, or what other people in our industry are actually doing.
So, and Groundwork is priced on top of Nagios, correct?
Yeah, the Nagios core. Our 6.1 release that just came out includes Nagios 3.2.
Mm-hmm.
And Nagios, oh my gosh, I can't compliment it enough. It's a fabulous product. It's one of the best event correlators out there. It has a wonderful community. Ethan Galstead runs that community as well as the project extremely well. And, you know, I applaud what he's done. And believe it or not, you know, it's a 10-year-old product. So it's extremely stable, extremely prevalent in a lot of the, you know, data centers and systems that I've known and heard about. You know, it's, everybody's very familiar with it and very happy with it. So, you know, Nagios itself does great. What Groundwork did was expanded into some new directions that would have probably been defocusing on what you know, it set out to accomplish. And so that's what, you know, basically what we've done with the product. Make it much more for system and network management outside of just system.
So what exactly did Groundwork do to expound upon the core Nagios system?
Oh, yeah. No, a whole bunch of stuff. You know, since we just did our sixth major version, you look at, you know, what we've done is a lot of performance enhancement, basic auto discovering configuration. We included, you know, things like ping, automatic alerts and notifications with escalations, put in exception rules and stuff like that, do downtime scheduling and alarm suppression. And then also we built a complete software stack installer. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but people like me that need to start a software stack installer, it just, you know, is a nice little gateway to make sure that we're getting off on the right step and not stuck on just configuration or configuring all the supportive pieces. So, yeah, we've done a whole bunch of stuff like that just included in the community edition, which, you know, we've gotten a lot of good feedback from.
What and other operating systems? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just saw someone in the IRC ask, it says 6.1 should be available next week, and it's actually available today. And so I don't know what page that is, but thanks for spotting that out, because I will definitely fix that.
Okay, well, what other operating systems other than, I see you support definitely Linux but and Windows, but do you also support like other Unixes like AIX, HPUX, so on and so forth?
Oh yeah, we can monitor everything, but we're actually a Linux build. So in fact, we just announced Ubuntu support, and we have some more announcements coming down the pike with that. Ubuntu has just been
That's the base operating system, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Not what you actually monitor, because it can monitor everything.
Right.
It can monitor everything, correct.
Right.
It can monitor BSD too, so okay.
Oh yes. Oh yes, oh yes. I mean, basically all the Nagios plugins, and there's over 1,500 of them available today, work, because Nagios Core is the core engine within Groundwork. And so, you know, the whole same thing with configuration files and everything, it all has that same compatibility, which, you know, it's really nice for people to you know, see, okay, does really Groundwork help me do my job better or not? And that's frankly what the community edition is about.
What components? You see, you use Nagios Core, but what other components you rely on, like PHP, so on, what other components?
Oh, great question. Need? So we rebuilt the user interface, and it's all in JBoss. So
okay.
If you've seen any of the previous versions of Groundwork Monitor, huge, huge, huge difference in the 6.0 line. 6.1 that just came out a couple of weeks ago is, you know, a lot less buggy and is pretty sharp. But it's all, you know, JBoss enabled, written with iSpaces. So we now have a really great wiki, a developer wiki area. So if you go to gwas.com/wiki, you can find out about writing customized portlets for those dashboards and all that other such, which we're getting a lot of traction on. And in fact, we're going to be doing a bar camp to offer some free training in March 2, 3, and 4. So, yeah. It's
nice.
It's awesome.
Where is that going to be? Cause,
online and free. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really?
See, I'll have to look into that. I happen to have a large interest in this topic because my company that I work for relies very heavily on Nagios to monitor our servers, and one of our new things that we're looking into is moving all of our monitoring over to Groundwork. So I'm very interested in this subject and definitely in a, you know, getting a little whatever help I can on the subject.
Are you gonna have that hosted link offsite?
No, we're running everything ourselves. I mean, I don't know what the you know what the idea is, whether or not we're gonna go for the paid support or not. I'm not that far into the project yet, but I do know that that's something that they're definitely looking at. And anybody who can, you know, if you've ever asked anybody if they've done anything with Nagios, any help you can get is you know, a bonus. So,
you know, I think you're spot on. So last weekend I went to Austin, Texas, and participated in Ops Camp. And there was a lot of interesting themes that came out that I'd love to babble on with you guys about. But one of the things is that people are doing more with even less time, right? So there's not as many specialists anymore. And frankly, to fine-tune Nagios on occasion requires a specialist. So I think that's how come people like Groundwork and other solutions as well. And of course, I'm biased because, you know, I'm feeding my kids here. This is awesome. But, you know, people just only have so much time in the day. And so if there's a, you know, a go-to solution that has things packaged and ready to do that you can just auto-configure, auto-deploy, you know, and set this as a routine instead of having to just make sure that you're doing, you know, auto-discovery checks frequently enough to pick up all the new devices and drop the old ones, then that's a good time save. You know, because sysadmins are developer, you know, admins, and they're doing so much stuff.
Little
now.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, well, sometimes we're asked to do multiple operating systems, too. I've got AIX, Red Hat, and Windows that I'm responsible for. So, I mean, I have to do all that.
Oh, come on. And you're also responsible for, like, the Salesforce.com deployment, right? So if your company uses an outsourced CRM that's hosted on demand or, you know, whatever it is, you're still responsible for it even though you can't control it. So your extension or your responsibility is getting pulled out like a big rubber band. However, people...
In our case, that will be Blackboard.
Yeah, Blackboard. It's
Blackboard, and we're also going to be implementing a portal by a company called Campus CII where I work. And even though that's remotely hosted, we're going to need to know when it's down and, if possible, find out why it's down. Because the users want to know that stuff. You know, like we had a database corruption in Blackboard. I didn't actually find that out until I talked to the person responsible for that. But, you know, that kind of stuff happens. But I actually got something I do have a question on about some of your plugins. AIX is a big primary for me, and I know that the AIX kernel has certain things are monitored in the kernel that, I won't say. Let's just say IBM probably has a better handle at monitoring those things than most of the monitoring packages. Do you support those kinds of things, like AIX monitors that, or like the AIX tools can support, like Nmon is one tool we use. Do they support some of those different kernel reporting features?
Okay, so I just looked for Nmon right now, and I'm not finding it. But we definitely have plugins for AIX. And so even though I'm here as, you know, speaking to you guys as, you know, Miss Groundwork, I also wanted to shed light onto a really cool project that we're doing, like our contribution back to open source that goes beyond, you know, our community edition package that I'm really, really proud of is actually monitoringforge.org. So on that site, what we're doing is collecting all sorts of open source tools, open source plugins that have any kind of relationship with monitoring. And I'm on that site right now, and because I don't know this stuff off the top of my head, but I see right now 5 plugins. There's AIX checked error report, AIX LPAR CPU usage, and then cache system check, NRPE standard plugins for AIX 5.2. So super cool stuff that the community has contributed and posted so that people like you who are looking for stuff can come on and say, oh yeah, I've used this plugin and it's great, or it sucks and I recommend blah de blah, blah. So
right.
Sounds kind of weird, but what we're trying to do is really connect the open source savvy systems together, right? You know, here's this place that you can go, check out all these tools, check out what other people are doing, and contribute either A, what you know, or B, what you use.
Sweet. And since IBM rarely changes a lot of those things, so like I see some of these, because some of these might concern me a little, but one of them was created in 2005, but to be honest, you know, they're evolutionary more than they are revolutionary with a lot of their releases. Like actually next week they're launching Power 7.
Really?
Yes, the Power 7 chips are going to be announced, and their systems are going to be announced next week. And then, like, the following week, I'm scheduled for a webinar to learn about those. So, those are going to be 8-core chips as well that I found out. Yeah. So, I mean,
so they can rule the world. That's crazy.
The power stuff is just incredible. So
you know what though, the open source community, the second someone needs it, they're going to be able to create some sort of, you know, plugin or profile perhaps, because it's a lot more complicated. I hope and I encourage people to post stuff on here. I mean, this site has only been around since September. We already have like 2,000 members, and it's just growing organically, which I love. You know, it's not any fake marketing hype, you know, big dollar spends. It's like, nope, let's just get to the core here. And we've got other open source projects participating on it. Like Zenos is on here. They're usually ranked really high in activity and downloads and such, and Mark Hinkle has just been a really good supporter of the site. So I'm just hoping, you know, this continues to permeate, and when there are innovations like the Power of 7 chip coming out, that, geez, hopefully someone can post it on here.
Yeah, well, it's more, I don't think from a monitoring aspect much would change on that, but I mean, it's a more powerful chip. I mean, we're talking 5 gigahertz chips. You know, they're just incredibly fast. Big RPerfs above 100 for some of the systems that we deal with. Of course, I'm not just one server that has, you know, that RPerf for that one LPAR. It's just, you know, I've got, you know, 5-6 servers on that machine, and they're all doing hard work.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then of course we want to monitor that. So, and I noticed going to your pricing, it's very fair. In fact, extremely fair, I should say.
Well, thanks. We've had some radical changes, and you know, it's kind of funny because I think people can really justify what they want to use, especially in today's economy. You know, I think how companies have, you know, used to sell this operation management,
you mean,
slice of monitoring.
What do you mean used to?
I think they're getting hammered, and I keep on hearing pricing changes. So,
yeah.
The newest thing that I heard is that they're charging per kind of plug-in or
yep, that's true.
Kind of activity that they're going to be using. So, ugh.
We have
saving compute, but it's still ridiculous.
We're currently, well, we have it, but we don't use it, but we have a tool called Nimbus, and they want to charge us, like, per server, per device, you know, and that gets to be really expensive, especially when you start looking at implementing it enterprise-wide, which, you know.
So what happens if you're
the other side of the house, running Novell and all that?
Yeah.
Right.
First off, how are they going to regulate, really? You know, and I don't know.
Oh, very easy. Very easy. You have to have the right code plugged into the system, otherwise the plugin just won't activate.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
So, that's a very rewarding feeling, I bet. I bet you're really stoked.
Oh yeah, yeah, it makes me really want to work hard to actually get the stupid thing working when I have to talk to and get some sort of big long hex code to plug in.
Yeah, and can you imagine how applicable that is for like monitoring something in the cloud environment? Wait, that just changed on you. Now what you gonna do?
Yeah.
Disappear? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm definitely gonna at least download some of the open components and give that a try.
Yeah.
Tara,
great.
Question for you: How does your product compare or fit in with other products like Zenos or Big Brother?
So we're pretty different than Zenos, and I'm actually asked that a lot in settings like this, but not in customer settings. So I think that's a really interesting observation, which is one, Zenos and Groundwork, even though we both say that we're going after the big four and replacements, we rarely run into each other. And so I think it also tells about how big the market is for monitoring, even though it's kind of considered unsexy slash panic mode whenever you're dealing with it. I see Zenos as a really good, fluid application. It has a brilliant UI, but I see Groundwork as an extremely strong distributed environment and heterogeneous environment solution. And again, what I mean by that is because of how, I mean, one of our bigger customers monitors 22,000 devices in several data centers around the world, and they're getting all that information into one tiny dashboard screen, and so we have this awesome sort of scalability that, has been in production since we've been in our 5X phase. So, I don't know as much, or I have not heard as much of Zenos success on that sort of scalability level.
Now, you said that you don't really run into Zenos or, butt heads with them out there in the market. I recall going to some conventions and stuff, trade shows, about 5-10 years ago, and seeing some of the monitoring solutions they had available. And just about every single one of those was like some company's proprietary system. How has that been with competing against those type of solutions?
Yeah, well, I think you're hitting it on the head, right? So with this really low price point, it's attracting a lot of new players to the game outside of the big four replacements that we've been doing. And in fact, believe it or not, last year we came across 58 different tool sets in a competitive situation one way or another. So there's still a bunch of them out there. But I think what we do when we figure things out is like, what are people trying to do from an end result, and what are the drivers for why they're looking at monitoring? And sometimes, like, if it's too log-centric, I know of some really strong solutions that they should evaluate first, unless there are other drivers that they're coming to, a Groundwork or Nagios route. So it's really interesting, because I think it's kind of based on the business impact, either A, the budget, and B, the need, outside of just the environment as well. I don't know if that answered your question. Perhaps? Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, I hit my mute button again. I have a tendency to do that. No, you
I'm
answered.
I'm like, wow, I just tanked.
Yeah, you blew me away. No, you did answer my question, but You have mentioned a few times the Big Four. What is the Big Four?
Oh my gosh! Thank you for stopping me. Ugh, I hate it when people talk in acronyms and not explain it. We consider the dinosaurs of in this industry being HP, IBM, BMC, and CA, primarily because they haven't been innovating, right? I mean, clearly, there's all the innovation is happening in open source among all these different projects out there. And B, the way they've been growing their footprint is by acquisitions. Like, I think I saw something insane, like IBM just made their 300th company purchase today. So, there's these companies out there that just have the chokehold on the industry just because they're ever present in all the medium to large organizations, be it educational to government, basically. And so that's, I guess, why we're going after this as, you know, a niche player, a good challenger, focusing on system and network monitoring.
Cool.
Now, looking you go right to the front page, and you're looking at pricing here off the front page, starting at $50 a year, which is, significantly cheaper than we spend on just a low-end VMS. And I'm saying, that's, compared to the, quote, Big Four, the other monitoring solutions that I've seen from commercial offerings, that's extremely affordable. Don't want to say
great,
cheap, because that makes it sound like thousands of dollars a year compared to $50 a year. I mean,
that's right.
How do
I
you guys stay
you
in business?
This. No, it's wonderful that you're saying this, because let me tell you, when I started off in the open source, I was actually at a company called Sugar Serum, which I know you guys know extremely well, and we were completely petrified of the word cheap. And I think nowadays it's actually a badge of pride, because A, we figured out our packaging. B, we have this price point that allows people to say, yes, I'm committed, and I'm going to get enough of a deal that I can basically see if your tool works or not. But, if you go onto our site and do this buy it today, you're not going to get a sales call. I'm saving a lot of money by sending you right to the little shopping cart, going through, the Uber cart, experience. And then you're going to get the bits. And we just launched automated training, so it's self-paced. You get to take it over 30 days. And so you get to do it on your own. We're not going to handhold you, not for $50. But if you're going to trade up into a deployment over 100 devices, well then, heck, you're going to be sold on it yourself, you're going to be educated by yourself, and then we're going to help you finish and tie up any of the loose ends that you have. So that's the whole spiel with Groundwork. We're trying to make it as straightforward and let the buyer decide if this works or not.
So,
and that's a really good thing.
I mean, treat you guys like adults. I mean, the concept. You're already doing everything else, It's just like, all right, we're not going to give you more headaches and hassles. It works or it doesn't.
I mean, this one looks like something I might actually be able to grab my hands around it and actually take a look at it and figure things out, because, oh my God, you got documentation. It's not that I have to go sit in a class in Timbuktu to learn the dang thing, do the basics I want.
That's right. So, that Amazon cloud deployment, perfect example. You can buy it now and have it running in Amazon before the show is over, and monitoring stuff, guaranteed, because that's how easy we want to make it. And, one of my whole beliefs, because before I was at Sugar, I worked for this company called E&J Gallo Wines, and so it was all about consumption. So at a very early age and stage of my career, what I knew about was palatability and making sure that the ease of purchasing just was brainless. And so, yeah, maybe a little bit of wine drinking inspired this whole process, but regardless, it's easy, and that's what it needs to be.
That is cool. And when you had brought up the monitoring forge,
yeah,
before, is that something that was started by the people at Groundwork, or are you, do you guys?
Yeah, so we're sponsoring it, but you know who built it is this company called Essentia, and they've been around for a couple of years. But we were the first project to take a forge externally. So the previous clients used the forge for things like employee and partner development, you know, dev, engineering, ops management, etc. Or, hey, we'll just expose it to our customers. We were the first customer of theirs to say, hey, we want to get your Forge project, but then not make it about us. So it was really hilarious to go through this rollout process, but ultimately I'm really pleased with the end result. You know, we still say this site is beta because on occasion we'll get some, you know, user problems and complaints, and until those are eliminated for, you know, a good couple of months, and there's another big rev coming out soon, I believe next quarter, you know, and it's a little bit more of a stable product, then, you know, Monitoring Forge won't be a beta. But, you know, it's like you see on the site, the very homepage, you can check out, you know, what are the most popular projects out there, and they're not only ranked by the ratings, also by the number of votes, so everything has like this interesting weighted factor, which was like a huge debate in our feedback forums, but I'm really stoked on the outcome. And also, you know, you can go in and start, anybody can write a review about, you know, a project or a plugin. So, you know, sharing experiences and all that such is definitely encouraged, and so yeah, it's been really fun, really neat. We have this call for participation on email monitoring right now, which we're going to soon move to the forum since we just launched that last week, and hopefully we can, you know, let anybody and everybody collaborate on how to do email monitoring better. And this can include things like, oh gosh, my company uses Postini, we just, you know, its blacklist just went down, which cut down Postini, which cut down my Exchange server, but I didn't know that, you know, and so it's just sharing experiences and tips and tricks like that with the crowd that we're looking to encourage outside of just, you know, plugin and project experience sharing.
Now, you're based out of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, I actually live in San Jose, though. So,
are you guys going to be at scale this year?
You know, we're going to have people to go down there. But I unfortunately missed the cutoff for actually exhibiting.
Well, just remember, it takes place between on February 19th to the 21st.
Correct.
At the Westin LAX.
It's always there.
Well, I just wanted to make sure the rest of our audience knows, because I forgot to play the promo.
And you guys are going to be broadcasting live.
Not from Scale, because we live on the opposite end of the country.
Oh, I thought I saw Scale on your lineup. Oh.
It's on our calendar.
It's on our calendar because we helped to promote it, but unless somebody's going to fly us all out there, we're all broke.
We got to talk to Alon about that. I think we can have you guys do a really good boss.
You know, we Alon's great. He contacts us about the end of January, and then a couple of times in February, and then maybe like a week after, or the first week of March, and then we never hear from him again until the next year.
Well,
and I wonder why that is.
He needs to hibernate after all of the energy that he puts forth, because it's a hell of a conference.
Oh no, he is a really good guy. He is.
Yeah.
And I would hope to get out to Scale one day. I think all of us would love to get out to Scale one day.
But we're also coming to Southeast Linux Fest, so we'll be there in June.
You are a sponsor for them, aren't you?
That is right.
Yay.
And Monitoring Forge will be there too, so we're kind of like a split personality sponsor.
So that's like a, I don't know, yeah. It's like twins.
Yeah, Siamese, but yes. So what?
Huh?
I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
I mean, clearly, you know, there's all of the Linux links that you guys are always, you know, pointing and referencing to. But what sysadmin or Forge areas do you guys like, you know, in general? Because I would love to hear feedback from you as to what, and more importantly, why. Because, you know, this is good feedback for me as well.
I'm not clear on the question.
What kind of sites do we like?
Yeah, what sites do you like?
Oh, what kind of sites?
And why do you like them?
Because it's funny.
Failblog.
You mean technical?
Dan, be good.
That was quite
good, Dan.
The very worst question in the world to ask Dan.
I know, maybe I should have said
that. That's right.
But PG rate this one, hold on.
You mean technically oriented blogs? Sites?
Administrative kind of sites, Dan, not the other sites that you look at.
Not LTM.
What's LTM?
No. I ain't saying it.
Wow. Changing gears there.
You know what? I'm not into system administration as much anymore. I'm more into software end of things, engineering, so I'm pretty poor to ask about just the system engineering stuff. So I'll let Link and Joel take over on that.
That's a good one.
Stumble.
There's a P-Series forum I obviously camp out in. I camp out in a lot of the P-Series forums when I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we have our ERP solution. We have our own forums that I use for that. Trying to remember. What is the...
And that's,
you know,
Blackboard, right?
I'll jump in here, Joel, because I'll add my two cents. When I have a problem or I have an issue that I have to resolve...
Google.
I usually hit Google,
yeah.
Which invariably leads me to something off an Ubuntu forum, because they're just so ubiquitous, or I'll use Linux questions. Sometimes I'll get up into the Arch.
Yeah, Linux questions is good.
Arch Linux Wiki.
My main P-Series one is the P-Series... tech.org. That's one I like to go on for when I need AIX specific things. Of course, IBM, they have an extensive set of wikis that are related to a lot of the stuff I actually work with. And then for just general Linux, like Ubuntu forums, I'll search through those. Definitely big ones. Google, of course. I just Google it, and 9 times out of 10, I find it, as long as it doesn't hit an experts exchange website.
There you
yeah.
go.
I hate that. Those things annoy me. But I mean, I really for most of the stuff, you know, IBM has a lot of great documentation already. I don't even have to go very far. I go through a class or something on something in PowerVM or something that I need to do, or like NIM, I just go right there.
Yeah.
It's not, definitely AIX stuff is probably not as well documented as the Linux stuff. The Nagios website, I was on there extensively looking at some stuff to implement Nagios, but now I think I'm going to download Groundwork and try that instead. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the show, because I've been thinking about it for a while.
Well, thank you. So. I'm glad. But, I mean, I think the other thing that's kind of interesting is you're an active reader.
Right.
You know, and the ones that you're listing, especially since you referenced, well, I'll Google it first, and then I'll go to, like, the IBM wikis, et cetera. I mean, you're looking for something really specific really fast, which,
right.
you know, I think is definitely
Absolutely.
The lion's share of participation, right, is just having factual tagged, meta-tagged information so it shows up in the search results, be it on the actual site or even better on Google, you know, for ranking. But,
right.
you know, the Ubuntu is, I would say, a really good community, right, because they really know how to nurture people and, you know, from the forums and get it into developer participation. So, you know, if Modern Forge can aspire to be anything, I would say, you know, more along the lines as to how Ubuntu is just like, you know, all are welcome and here's the path. Plus, it's very community council organized, and
yeah.
I think that keeps the respect and keeps the participation going instead of just active readers, active participants.
Yeah, and it's not that I always agree with what the Ubuntu community comes up with. Like, for example, for their desktop stuff, I don't agree with them removing the GIMP from the desktop distribution for Lucid. But, I mean, I really can't complain too much. I mean, it is, you know, if you want to set up a quick LAMP stack,
mm-hmm.
you know, Ubuntu is a great go-to. I mean, you concur with that, Link, I think?
No. He says Slackware just like
Link?
I do all the way.
Yeah, man, Slackware all the way.
yeah, Slackware, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, they have a very good forum there with a great user base, and they provide very good examples on how to do a variety of different tasks, which is important, and hopefully Monitoring Forge is going to end up being much the same sort of an asset for me and
yeah,
my
totally.
System administration travels.
Right.
I would really dig that.
Well, that's what we want to do.
Right. I do have a quick question for you about groundwork.
That's all the time we have for you, Link. Have a good night.
this is one that the folks who are in charge of the groundwork install at my university wanted me to ask, and that is, what would you say is the most appropriate the most appropriate machine, I guess, or the most appropriate set of resources that you would need to get a good groundwork install running. For instance, the comment that I got today as I walked out of work was, make sure to ask them about installing groundwork on a VM, which is, you know, we have a large virtual infrastructure, which is, you know, by far amongst most businesses today, right? It's more economical, it's easier to take care of, and so on. And so, we have this large VM infrastructure, and what we'd like to do is install groundwork, of course, on a VM, because it's cheaper for us to, you know,
yeah.
install
it
on a
ESA?
VM than it is to provide it with a giant hunk of hardware. However,
yeah, are you guys running VMware ESX, or what are you using?
We're running ESX. But the problem that we're running into is that groundwork on a VM is this giant, fat thing that just is so cumbersome and slow under a VM. And it perhaps, you know, we're just going about it the wrong way. And what we really need is a good set of ground guidelines for our VM creation. Like, should it have, you know, multiple processors, and how many, and what kind of RAM do you think is appropriate for a decent running setup, and what sort of resources do we need to give groundwork so that it runs like you guys had envisioned?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no. Great question, because, I mean, it's all in the documentation, but it's just so much easier to cut to the chase. Go get 8 gigs of RAM. I think I know we say, like, you can do things, I believe, I think our minimum is, like, 4, but do 8 gigs. And you are going to need, like, 500 gig space for the application. So, like, a quad-core processor, I think that would work relatively stable for that. The new SLES VM build is pretty awesome, and it does have, I believe, SLES 10 in it. So, you know, for $59, like, wink, wink, you could buy it parsed out, like, buy Novell SLES for $250, or buy our version of this, and it is LIP supported, it is truly licensed, but Novell was really cool with us and gave us a hell of a discount, and that's why we passed it on. And, you know, that I would definitely say do the 8 gigs of RAM on the machine to run that, and it should be totally fine. I don't know, you know, how you have your VMs ESX environment set up, so, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, the older Community Edition that you were using that was experiencing the problem, but that SLES one is pretty solid.
Now, this is brand new equipment, state of the art, brand new ESX 4 installations. You know, giant high powered servers, multi CPU, 128 gig of RAM kind of thing. And
there shouldn't be any.
The problem, well, you know, it's just, it's a matter of just getting everything just right. You know, we have giant servers, but our VM environment is, you know, we may have 400 servers that we're running across, you know, 6 or 8 VMware servers.
Yeah.
ESX servers. So it's just sort of allocating the correct amount of resources to make sure that the groundwork install is going to.
No, and I think
that you guys had admitted it instead of.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good question. I personally, you know, I'm not that knowledgeable, but I would definitely get you that answer. You know, there's a lot of people in this company, a whole heck of a lot more smarter than I about this install. I mean, you know, I install this to do demos. I'm not, you know, reliant on it. What you're explaining is a real need. So
right.
Why don't I just share the right answer with you when I get it? So
That'd be great.
Yeah, no worries.
Because, I mean, you know, I know that Groundwork has this fantastic, you know, like you said, it's got this VM appliance. It's already built and ready to go. And that, by the way, is a fantastic way for anybody who's looking to test out Groundwork to test it out. Just get the VM appliance.
Exactly.
And run it under VMware, whatever the hell you have. And it goes and works, and you can check it out and see all the fancy graphics and the dashboard and the nifty-looking reports and all that stuff. All the stuff that management really, really likes. Okay.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That is what this is totally a
management-driven
monitoring system. Yes, they're visually-driven people. Management normally is, and they like the pretty pictures. And this is, but I believe, in my opinion, this is what Groundworks really gives you. Okay, it's a way to. I don't want to say placate management, but it's a way that speaks to them easier than a bare pile of numbers, usually. You know, and so
oh,
in
don't.
That respect, it's a really great product. That's kind of, if it happens to actually do the monitoring and things that we as system administrators need, that's so much more the better. Go ahead.
It's so funny that you're doing, you know, you're asking and talking about this, because this is a real thing that it's like, how do I connect and explain how demanding, you know, we need the monitoring system to be? And one of the things that we did at Groundwork is we... Are you guys familiar with George Surratt, the artist? He's a really cool artist. He's, I think, French, or maybe Belgian. But anywho, his paintings, they're made out of all these tiny polka dots. And each polka dot is in a different color. And he just made these humongous wall-sized pieces out of tiny, tiny little dots. And it's mind-boggling when you get to see it in real life. Anyways, what Groundwork did and why I'm bringing up George Surratt is we created this new thing called Surratt View, which is a lot of little tiny polka dots so that you can see all the systems in your network and to see their statuses, and so you can group them, like seeing all red up on the top and, you know, yellow in the middle and white, which means everything's cool down below. And so it shows how much, you know, capacity is running, especially if you're doing, you know, checks every 5 minutes, because then you see how demanding, you know, that server is and compiling all the information, figuring out the status for each of the devices or each of the systems, depending on how the Surratt configured, and then allow the admin to drill into it as well to go and say, okay, what's going on in this system event console, and can I log in? I've got this problem and I'm fixing it, or send it over to somebody else that's responsible for it. So
that's sort of like a knock view of things.
Exactly. But we call it the Surratt view.
And
yeah.
Then you can, from there, can you drill into all the nice metrics that the management really digs?
Yep. And frankly, you know, giving management the Surratt view to start with, and then probably limiting the roles and access to the specific details. Maybe, you know, let them see host groups or service groups or something like that. But not that they can say, "Hey, I'm solving this," because they're not. They're probably making it worse. It's safe.
Definitely. I mean, you know, my boss will believe that. You know, when he gets complaints that the server's slow, he'll look at it and say, "Hey, we're not using up all the CPU, or that we mm-hmm. we are, and think it's a bad thing, or I don't know." He just doesn't understand even though we might not be using all the hardware, or even if we are, it doesn't mean that there's anything we can do about the performance, at least in the short term, anyway.
Well, and right, so performance inhibitors, especially if you're looking at like a web-based app, which in my little view of the world, it seems to be they're ever-present now. There are so many dependencies, right? You're getting a feed from another system, which, you know, you're dealing with chokes on the network, drop packets, all this other stuff that can be absolutely affecting that system performance, or, you know, the database or what have you. So, you know, as our compute power and capability become even more robust, our dependencies do as well. And so that's how come, you know, you got to have that monitoring server, you know, the enterprise server, the communication server, to be really well supported to handle all that such, to do the right event correlation as to where specifically is the problem, you know, and get that solved fast.
I mean, and you're right too. A lot of times it isn't even our problem. Like a.
No.
I write for a Gear Diary, and it's basically it's a WordPress blog. Well, occasionally our site will clock, but it's not actually WordPress that has the problem. It's actually one of our ad servers. Yeah.
That's right.
The ad server's choking.
Yep, and that's where the page load times are having, you know, problems, et cetera. And, you know, Groundwork has some fabulous add-ons. There's one for free, WebInject, we all know and love really well, and then we have this relationship with this company called Indium, and they created this product called iScout, and it does business process synthetic transaction polling, and it is super, super cool, and it's a hosted solution. So you know, again, you can have the person that's running the ad program set the stuff up and say, hey, look, you design it, you make sure that it's monitorable, help me fill in the gaps, and that makes your life a lot easier because that information will then synchronize with the monitoring server, and voila, you know, before you say, oh, my, you know, Apache server is blowing up, it's no, the feed from, you know, some ad serving website is actually being choked because, you know, there's some problem on the network or whatever, and that's why we're having problems.
Tara.
Yes.
I was just looking here at your management team, and because I didn't recall what your position was there. You're the chief marketing officer. Correct?
Yes.
Prior to working for Groundwork Open Source, you had mentioned a few. You worked with Sugar CRM.
Sugar. Yes, I was the first employee.
You okay? That's
good. I'm not kidding.
Do you have a technical background then?
Or are you again, more just going back to my Italian nature that. I just am a little relentless. At Gallo, believe it or not, I taught myself how to program because myself, along with this lady named Pamela Monroe and Steve Fidel, we put together the first internal website. It was actually an extranet that connected all of the distributors of Gallo together so that they can order their point of sale. And it wound up being a humongous cost-saving effort that proved itself within the first year. In fact, the first holiday season, we were actually shipping point of sale to areas that wanted it and not over-shipping point of sale to areas that didn't want it. I mean, what a revolutionary concept back in the 90s, but big, big deal. And so I fell in love with web apps, and Pam was actually the first person that taught me how to program. She's like, okay, so this is a database, and it was S-based, and this is HTML, and this is how it all worked. Well, I just totally fell in love with web programming and left being a merchandising manager at Gala Wines, where I was responsible, like, for coming up with those point-of-sale stuff. And came over to the Silicon Valley and worked for a company called Edify as their webmaster. But I totally bit off much, much more than I can chew because I read a couple books and, you know, my Italian attitude, I thought I knew it all. But I didn't, and I made some, like, awesome first day mistakes. Like, after I left the server room, I turned it off. And people are like, our website's on, what the fuck? And I'm like, oh, so the server has to be up. And it was a really true, honest to God mistake. And then they explained to me, yes, Tara, so the thing that is actually hosting the code that you wrote needs to stay on. And so outside of convincing them to not take my badge and keep me employed, I slowly redeemed myself and learned how to program in Cold Fusion and learned a little bit about, you know, database structures and stuff. Basically enough to be dangerous, but also enough to really be fascinated by a consumer experience online. And so, you know, who am I and what am I motivated by? Am I a hack? Yes, in golf, but not really in coding, but I know enough if things are going the right path or the wrong path, and that was definitely helpful at Sugar.
Sugar is another product built on open source.
Right, it's LampStack.
So what?
It's all mostly PHP.
Yeah. So I mean, did you just fall into that sort of technology? It just happened to be there, or did you actively pursue that kind of environment working with open source?
Well, you know, the co-founders and I actually worked together at a company called Epiphany beforehand. And Epiphany's rate of innovation when I entered wasn't as fast as it was before. They did some fabulous stuff. They also made some awesome acquisitions, and then it just kind of got into slow-mo. And then the three co-founders left and started to write Sugar. And about 4 months after that, then they contacted me and said, look, I think we have enough to actually launch a CRM company, but get this, it's open source. And I just met, oh, I forgot his first name, one of the Apache guys. I don't always say his last name is Stein. Super sweet. I had him over at Epiphany to do a podcast with us. And, oh my gosh, I just sat there with my mouth open the whole time because he was telling me what the Apache Foundation was doing. Well, not me, but, you know, the audience. But here I am, you know, AV girl making things happen and, you know, collecting leads, right? And I'm like, holy crap, this is really going to put companies like Epiphany out of business. Just kind of laughing myself because it was one of those moments. And then when John Roberts called me up, he's like, hey, we're doing CRM instead of just, you know, part of the stack as open source. You want to give it a whoo? I'm like, holy hell, this is awesome. Totally. And my husband was totally supportive. He's like, yeah, man, go for it. You're not happy, you know, at Epiphany, so, you know, why not go into a company of three co-founders and see what you can muster up? And it was way cool.
That's pretty interesting.
By now, you are completely running Linux on a desktop and programming in PHP on a LAMP stack, right?
Actually, that's my daughter. Yeah, my kids nowadays.
I like that.
You knew the question was going this way. You know, it had to
absolutely. Yeah. No. I'm a Mac user right now. However, my demo is
a Mac user.
Oh, stop.
Too bad Pat's not on here.
My little email. Pat is dead to us. That's kind of funny. So my little
Pat hates Mac
right now is actually the Android. Like, the little thing that I can't get out of my head is my darn...
Which one?
I have the Droid, but I am so fascinated by Google Android,
Droid.
Man. Droid. Yeah, they needed help with that. Why didn't they call it Andy? Because then it would totally appeal to women and, you know, never mind.
And make it pink, too. Why not?
Mine is purple.
Purple skin, huh?
Yes. But my Mac is pink, so, I mean... Yeah, femme fatale.
Actually, I want a Nexus 1, but just because it's fast.
You know, I am almost wanting to do the 2.1 upgrade because I heard the Nexus 1 gets the flash, which you guys are definitely opinionated about. But for me, darn it, that's one of the showstoppers.
I'm running Cyanogen on my
G1. I do have a question
G1.
Before you guys get too far off on your droidgasm. I noticed that upcoming events on the Groundwork open source site said access Groundwork monitor via iPhone. I was curious whether there is going to be a Droid
Android app, please.
App. And then you guys can just go have your droidgasm.
That would be awesome.
This is my APB, darn it. I'm going to just throw it out there. I need to find a good Droid developer that knows Groundwork or knows Nagios. I can find Droid developers. I just can't find one that is familiar with this. Our iPhone guy, because I'm going to be doing that webcast tomorrow, and anybody that wants to join, please do. It's going to be hilarious and demo, and you get to hear my voice again. Ugh. Sorry for you. But, yeah, it's way cool because he understood Nagios, he understood the native environment and how not to basically create security holes in the monitoring server, which could be, if you think about it, a huge vulnerability. So he did it right. And I'm super stoked on that. But, you know, I would love to find an Android developer that has the same sort of knowledge and background and would want to work with us.
if an Android developer did have Nagios experience, where a Nagios implementer had Android programming experience, how would they get in touch with you?
I'm on the website. I'm on
OpenSource.com.
Twitter, I'm everywhere. I'm just ping me, no problem.
Kara's like Oprah Winfrey.
Ping me.
Is she gonna give us a car?
Ping me, ping me.
But hopefully I'm
not. No, she's gonna give us Kindles. She's gonna give us Kindles.
Oh my god.
A KFC fried, KFC grilled chicken.
Okay, did anybody get a giggle about how? Hold on, serious question here. When the iPad came out, did anybody get a giggle on how the Kindle numbers all of a sudden magically appeared? Or was that just me?
You know, I don't get it. That's all I'm saying.
The Kindle what appeared?
I have a Kindle.
Their customer numbers and how rampant and successful they are.
Yeah.
I didn't even pay attention to any of that. I'm sorry.
I'm marketing. I just get so I laugh at the counter fluff movements. Like fluff and counter fluff. That's awesome.
Well, you know, I heard on a I don't know. This would be considered a marketing ploy or whatever, some extent maybe. But I heard that the publisher Macmillan had signed a deal with Apple to get their books on the iPad, or Apple's book.
Actually, yeah.
Are you done interrupting me now? Because I'm not finished.
Well, say what it is. The Macmillan guy messed up, and so Jobs got pissed off.
Oh, I didn't know about that. All I heard was Amazon then turned around and banned all the, or took off all the Macmillan books off the Amazon site. But go ahead, Gordon.
That's
you know
well,
what,
they
Joel,
did that
you probably
too.
Know it better than I did. I butchered it, and I apologize.
That's go all ahead. Right. Actually,
but
I do, only because we have a.
This is the first time, yeah.
We have an ebook freak. No, it's not the first time.
That I butchered it, or that something like this has happened?
Both. Now, just to give a little history on Jobs, there's a book called Icon that I believe was produced by Wiley and Son, I think it was. And basically, it was a unauthorized... it wasn't an entirely negative, but it wasn't entirely positive biography of Steve Jobs. Well, Steve Jobs wrote it, and they didn't like the fact that they spelled... Icon is in little I, big C, O N. So Jobs got pissed off and pulled all of Wiley's books from the Apple Store. But like back to the Macmillan thing though, same thing happened here. Macmillan, the guy, there's like a big, I think it was the CEO or the VP of Macmillan. He was on like I think it was either CNN or MSNBC. I can't remember which. But and he said basically outed the iPad on the show, and then I'd launched a Macmillan's name was suddenly missing from the slide. You can actually see where they kind of shuffled it around and made it look like Macmillan was never there to begin with. So but then Amazon was trying to the Amazon deal, they were negotiating prices with Macmillan. I think Macmillan wanted to raise the price up to, you know, $14 or $15 for new releases versus $9, and Amazon didn't want that. They pulled them out, but then when they put them back in, they kind of said, we're just going to let the customers speak, and if they decide to buy the book at $14 or $15, well, then we know who won. And if they don't, well, you know, so sorry for Macmillan, you know.
Yeah.
They're basically trying to do the same thing that Apple has done with the music industry to keep the prices low. But then Apple capitulated, too, and they have three-tier pricing with them now, too. But Apple prefaced that and said they can get the three-tier pricing if they remove the DRM. So you can buy music on the Apple Store, iTunes Music Store, with no DRM now. So... But anyway... which all this has not a lot to do with open source, but a little bit, I guess.
Well, it does, because it, like, I'm always fascinated with, you know, the sort of distribution control in place instead of just letting the pure market just take its effect. And so maybe it shows my capitalism, but I think that's how come I really like open source in nature, is just because the best wins. And so...
Yeah.
You guys first asked me the question, well, how do you make money? You know, it's the most common question in commercial open source, and the answer is the most easiest way possible, right? And that's kind of interesting, because this whole...
Robbery?
E-book fight. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I wouldn't say robbery, Link, but what I would say is they're charging a fair price versus the likes of Adobe and all these other companies who want to charge you $300 or $400 for a graphics editor.
I mean, you know, the comment was make money the easiest way possible, and like that's how Comcast makes money off of me. That's how Verizon makes money off of me. They rob me every month.
Well, you know what? You know what, Tara? You bring up a really good point there, I think, about that open source provides you the capability, the customer, the capability to put their money where their mouth is. You know, go with the solution that fits them the best. The only problem I see with this whole electronic publishing war, or whatever it's going to turn out to be, of Amazon versus Barnes & Noble, you know, the Kindle versus the Nook versus the iPad and stuff like that. The only problem I see with this is the barrier for entry is set far higher for the average person than almost any other format or media out there at this moment. You could go to the bookstore and buy a book for anywhere between $7 and hundreds of dollars. You know, if I want to buy a computer book, we're looking at an average of $39. If I want to buy the electronic version of that book, now I got to go out and buy a device that supports, that will allow me to purchase just to get my foot in the door. Like, I can't go on my computer here right now and say, well, I want to, you know, I think fair price is $14. I think the author deserves to get a little more, or the publishing company, because it's not the author. I think Macmillan deserves more money from me, right? I can't go and make that decision unless I go out and buy an iPad or an Apple device. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, I can't go to Amazon and say, I want to buy that electronic book for you, because, you know what? Why should I be spending $5 more to the publishing company? I want to buy the book from you, because I think you have the fairest price. But I can't, because I don't have a Kindle. So now, like, I'm left out of that market.
Well, and that's the whole distribution quandary, right? And it's amazing to see these big guys do these really dumb barriers of entry for new and emerging technology. You know, I'm a parent. I care about our education system tremendously, because now I've propagated and there are more Spaldings in this world. Holy crap. So our education system hasn't changed in the last 100 years, i.e. we still go through old books. And so nowadays, with, you know, social everything, social media, social development, blah-de-de-blah, we're not teaching our kids how to think and be educated in those social circles, because we're still giving them this traditional book. And it just blows me away, because, you know, only the early technology adopters, because really, like, how many Kindles do you think are in Lincoln, Nebraska? I'm going to say not that as many per population compared to out here in San Francisco. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know the statistics. I mean, if you're from Lincoln, because I'm from CU. But, no, I'm joking. I'm not going to bag on Lincoln, Nebraska. But, you know, the concept is that it's just foolish, because it's profit over, you know, this distribution, which could ultimately lead to more profit. You know, it's that short quarter visibility, because they're a public company. So I agree with you. It's very, very interesting, and another reason why I think open source is rad.
And you know what? You know who loses in the end? You know who loses in the end? Because you know, when I want that book and I can't get it in electronic format, the publisher loses in the end. Because then I go on the Google,
right,
on the web, searching Google for,
yep,
the electronic PDF. I download it for free. Now,
yep,
the author gets screwed, the publisher gets screwed, and I got my book. And I,
oh,
feel
there
like,
you go.
You know, and I
how
hate
about
to admit
BitTorrent?
That.
You know, you think of,
yeah,
all of,
yeah,
the things, that, all of the systems that have been developed to bypass the bullshit distribution that people think that they can capitalize on when in the end they're losing. It's awesome.
Yep. Well, it's like Amazon's new, Amazon has the new royalty model, where if you want to publish a book via Amazon, direct, you're not going to Macmillan, you're not going to other publishers, you're going direct to Amazon, you can get 70% of the sale price back to you. So, Dan, if you want to write a book for the Amazon Kindle, you can do that, and you can make money a lot more than you would if you went to the publisher.
Write it, of course, your book.
And Amazon only gets 30% of that.
And I look at companies like O'Reilly. I love O'Reilly. I think they're a great publisher. And they've done a lot for our industry, right?
Right.
And they're going to get hosed by companies like Amazon.
Actually, O'Reilly, I think, didn't they did an experiment. They removed all DRM from their e-books. Sales increased. I'll have to find that story.
Ooh, that's really good and gossipy. Yeah, see,
well,
so
how,
that
how
needs
do you get their
there.
How do you get their ebook then? Like, how can I go out and buy an O'Reilly ebook without having to go through?
Yeah,
the,
here we go.
Safari.
You go directly
service.
Through O'Reilly to get it. That's how you get it.
That's
but
how
as
you
long
get
as
it.
You
yeah.
You can get it in a as long as you can find your book, and this is what's happened. You know, the publisher
from Boing Boing guys.
As long as you can find your book in a raw PDF form, you can use it on the Kindle, on the, you know, iPad, on the whatever the hell device it is.
What is it called? Nook from Barnes & Noble?
Yeah.
Yes, the Nook.
Yeah.
Based on Android. Can I get my Android dig? Yeah, O'Reilly drops ebook DRM and sees 104% increase in sales. 104%.
That's
think
awesome.
About that. I mean that is significant, and that tells us that hey, people, just because you remove the DRM off the file doesn't mean that we're gonna pirate it. We want to pay a fair price. We don't want to have to actually deal with, you know, what happens if Amazon drops the Kindle altogether? You know, what's going to happen to my Kindle books? Right now, I really don't know.
Right, well, removing the DRM means that we can use it our way.
Right. I can take that O'Reilly PDF base book, put it on my Kindle, I can put it on a Nook, I can put it on an iPad if need be. Or I can put it on my netbook. In every way, I can read it. I can read it on any device, and there's no restriction. And that means I'm not going to give that file away either. That's mine. I'm not going to just give it to people. You know? Because I'm going to say, hey, O'Reilly charges a fair price. Go buy it here. Go buy it for $10 or whatever it is. You know? Actually, in the O'Reilly books, it's a lot
more,
I'm sure.
People who are going to cheat are going to cheat. And I think that's also coming up in IRC right now. You know, there are dishonest people that will always find a way around the system, right? But
right.
The thing is don't penalize the people who haven't done something wrong. I mean, that's kind
right.
of what this country was founded on. Innocent.
Well, DRM hurts no one. or I'm sorry, not hurt no one. I'm sorry, opposite. DRM hurts no one, but the end user. It does, you know, it hurts the end user because now you can't do what you want with that. You know, it makes your life frustrating. Back in the Microsoft Reader days when I used to run around with a Pocket PC, I actually got a couple books and I always had to enter my stupid credit card number in there just to make it work between installs and all kinds of stuff. And then now the Microsoft Reader is history. And I can't read any of those books. So
yeah, it,
thanks, Microsoft.
I mean, oh, that list is long.
Yes, it sure is. But yeah, you know, so I mean, then that's what, you know, the DRM only hurts, you know, it doesn't hurt O'Reilly, all right? It doesn't hurt the author, but it hurt the person it really hurts is the person who paid for that, the people who want to give you money. You don't hurt the people who want to give you money.
I completely agree. Probably that's how come Groundwork has the pricing the way it does.
Yeah.
I'm not going to charge you on process or compute power or how many things you check, because that's really crazy.
But so, and actually, I got a really interesting question on that. You know, since your pricing is so fair, have you ever had companies say, "Hey, your pricing is too cheap. We want to give you more money"?
No.
Probably not. But I mean,
have you ever considered having your pricing set low and reasonable? Almost sounds to some companies like you don't have a product to sell.
Well,
you know
what I mean?
Like big enterprise companies are looking to spend lots and lots of money on their stuff, and if you don't charge lots and lots of money, they don't think you have anything to offer.
The thing is that they're not. When I was in sugar, we ran away from the word cheap because it was a direct affiliation between a cheap price point and a cheap product. But nowadays, because Google, it's all Google's fault this went away, right? Because Google kicks ass and it is free. It set a whole new experience for what is free and what is cheap better work damn good. So, you know, same thing with Ubuntu, right? Or there's so many different packages out there for free or cheap that just rock.
Mac, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, Mac's yep. different. you know, they Apple, man. I don't know what else to say.
Now go ahead. I have a Mac too. In fact, I have several.
So do I.
Well, you have a MacBook and a Mac Mini, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, and my daughter has a Mac, and actually she has two. But
so I just bought a Mac Mini, and I think tonight I'm going to be too tired to play with it, but I can't wait to get that running.
They're neat little machines.
Yeah. It's so cute.
Yep. I might actually get one to put it in the wall. That would be cool.
In the wall.
Yeah, there was somebody who actually has done that.
What do you mean in the wall? How are you going to put a mini in the wall?
They mounted it in the wall, and the only thing that you see of it has basically is the USB ports and the monitor port. That's it. In fact, it really looked nice, the install I saw.
Well, that's really
cool. Do like a wall-mounted touch screen or something like that? That would be...
I think it just had a touch screen sitting on like a kitchen counter or something like that.
That's cool. Okay, that's...
There was all kinds of cool hacks.
Yeah, huh?
I mean, they're really just... There's just really neat ones. Like, I've heard of people taking, like, the Mac Mini and, like, figuring out how to power it off of automotive power and shoving it in their car somewhere, you know? All kinds of different things.
Well, and it... I mean, it's super tiny, which is nice, but it's really powerful for the size. I was kind of blown away. I mean, it's still pretty expensive, but I don't know. I'm pretty excited to start playing with it and see what I can put on there.
Put Linux on it.
Start by doing a parallel. Great.
There it is.
So I have another question for you guys, because I have a ton of questions. Do you guys follow Boxy any?
I love Boxy.
Do you really?
Yep.
What's your favorite channel?
I have it running on the Neuros Link, which is basically a PC that's designed to be plugged into your TV. It runs on that really well. I also actually have it installed on my netbook.
How does it run on the netbook?
Local video plays just fine. Flash is kind of eh. But local video.
Flash for me.
Well,
Alan.
I thought he said he hasn't had too much trouble with Flash. Every once in a while, it chatters a little bit, but that may be because I'm also doing wireless.
And do you have a Atom processor?
He's got the Spire.
Yeah, the little Spire. Okay.
I've got a 900 megahertz Celeron, so mine would probably be anemic.
Have you guys seen
the
box?
You got the. Oh, I want one of those too.
What is the capacity compared to like a netbook? Do you guys know the specs on that?
I think
this is a Roku box.
I'd have to look what D-Link has their specs at for that.
Coming 2010. Oh, they don't really. Oh, maybe I'm looking in the wrong space. But it's so cute. I would say this would challenge the Mini.
I kind of. The one thing I don't like about it is its odd shape. But that's about it. The remote is cool as hell, though. That remote is really slick. With the keyboard on the back, you know. I see it's got two USB ports. It's got two USB ports, Ethernet, optical out, HDMI out.
Yeah, I think you're right about the keyboard. That makes it super cool. Oh, it's a full.
Well,
screen.
Yeah. I mean, well, you need something to enter in like your login information in the Boxy. At a minimum. Plus for searching through Boxy for things like plugins and whatnot. But I think my favorite plugin is Pandora by far. But I also found one. There was another plugin on Boxy which lets you listen to streaming radio stations. So I actually can listen to our local radio through my through Boxy.
My buddy Rob does development for Boxy, or apps that want to go Boxy. And my favorite for sure is the channel that he worked on, Auto-Tune the News. I don't know if you've seen it.
I'm firing my link up now.
My daughter wants me to play it, and it's probably not a good thing because she's 4 or almost 4 and is learning everything about auto-tuning and politics, but it's pretty awesome.
Noggin also has a channel, too.
Yep.
For your daughter. Which is kind of slick. For the younger ones. For my son, it does nothing, but...
How old is he?
Actually, he's 10. And last night, it was funny. Last night, I fired up the nearest link in now Hulu doesn't work through Boxy right now, but that's okay because this thing has a web browser on it, and I fired up ALF on Hulu, and my son just loved that. I mean, it's an incredibly old TV show, but
Hulu
just,
works on Boxy.
They have a
pseudo type browser because I know I'm watching stuff on it now.
Yeah. You're right. I forgot about that. I just fire up the browser. I mean, it's just easier for me.
There it is.
That's actually my Tux droid. But Tux droid's a neat
Claudio
little
likes
robot. Yeah, Tux droid is a neat little robot that basically it can like read news and weather and stuff to you. It's really programmable too. But
that's awesome.
It's got a little remote control too. Oh Lord. Yeah, Boxy's a really cool project. Yeah, I like XBMC. That actually, the new version of XBMC is really nice too. but I actually kind of like Boxy a little bit more. For
oh,
the,
you like Across
it
the Room or
something?
It does
a little bit better. Figure it. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just not talking.
Say, are you
at the
across
mic.
The room there?
No.
Suddenly you got very echoey.
If Joel is across the room from you, dude, you are in a long-ass room.
Yeah.
That is a long room. But
Ekmont's only 800 miles.
Let's see, got Revision 3, Major League Baseball. NASA TV has a channel, too, so that's there. I mean, there's just so much cool stuff. You could just be entertained for hours with Boxy.
Oh, for sure.
And not even have any videos in it. So. What do you have
that
on?
It's always interesting to see the...
Did you put Boxy on your link yet? Link?
Me, no.
No,
my
you
link
should.
Is just sitting there staring blankly at me right at the moment. Boxy on my laptop, though.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Terry.
It works good on laptops.
That's how I run mine. Mine's on the
laptop. Yeah. I'm just excited to see what else is going to come for Boxy. I mean, with the hardware and, you know, they've got some really neat stuff going on with that. And I mean, I think it's awesome. They basically forked XBMC and ran with it.
I know. It's awesome. And you think about, like, where all these other companies went wrong. You know, you think of TiVo.
Yeah.
Oh,
Microsoft
God.
Media
you know.
Center.
Oh, yeah. The Media Center. I had that.
It sucked.
You know, what sucked was the remote. The remote was just a crapola. With that, you know, extra USB plug, I had to pull that thing out, the reader out, to put in my printer. I remember. It was such a pain in the butt. Yeah, so it's just so nice to see this going. And you know, I know they want to do a lot with Apple TV, but I'm just kind of thinking to myself, no. I think you've been passed.
Yeah, Frugal, the Boxy Box does have HD.
Yep.
Definitely. In fact, I think that's all it has.
I don't know.
Judging by the looks of it. Yes, HDMI, optical audio, RCA audio, Wi-Fi, Ethernet, two USB ports, an SD card slot, RF remote, and a QWERTY with a QWERTY keyboard.
That's going to be what, $200?
$129, I think. I thought.
$129?
Well, it might be $199, I think. I think it's what it might be. I don't think the official price. It's not, put it this way, I'm on the official page and there is no price listed right now.
All I want to know is when it's coming out, that's all.
Why, are you going to buy one for us all, Alan?
Hell no. Buy your own damn box.
That's what I thought. Now we know the true colors of Alan Metzler.
Hey, I buy enough stuff for the show.
Yeah, you do. You do.
But you say, I see Mashable.com said it's going to be $200 or around $200.
Yeah.
So that's really
Engage.
Good.
Say it's under 200, so that could be $199.
I'd do it.
I would too. I want one of these.
Yeah.
That,
it,
remember,
it's quick
TiVo
box.
Was what, 400 when it first came out.
Mhm.
So, yeah.
And I love my TiVo.
It, not in the mesh specs. And since it runs Linux, it's probably going to be hacked. You know it will be. So, DSM. Oh, actually, here. I just actually found it on the D-Link website. See, it'll still have a price listed. So. See, I love it. You click on specifications, and it has the outputs, and the fact that it has Ethernet and all that, but it doesn't tell you, like, does it, what does it have? Does it have an Atom on it?
Mm-hmm.
NVIDIA Ion, you know? I don't know. That's that, the Ion is what I want in my next netbook. I want one of those.
Are you talking about the D-Link box?
Yeah. D-Link, boxy box. You know what,
I don't know.
We ought to look into writing a boxy application for the stream.
I think that would rock.
Put the Linux Link Tech Show on boxy. We should do it, guys.
Yes. I like that idea a lot.
As an application. That should, I don't know. I'd have to look at it, see how possible it would be.
I can't think
it would be that hard. it's all Python, I think. So,
well, I mean, think about it. It's a good crossover into TV, and I'm the kind of person that I'm like you guys. I hate Comcast because it's total extortion, but I will flip through all 900 channels trying to find something, and I hate the UI on it. Like, why only display 4 channels at a time? Like, everything else has gotten such a better search and seek capability except for Comcast. And it would be awesome to say, sayonara, pull in boxy.
High Warner sucks, and get, too, though.
Yeah. We'll get the crossover of the podcast like this, you know, through the TV. That would be so nice instead of me doing that on my computer. Love it.
Well, we already got, we're already on Miro. I don't know if you've ever loaded Miro on your netbook.
I haven't.
Or laptop. Yeah. Miro, we're on the Miro Internet TV, which that used to be called the Democracy Player, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Before Miro. I liked Miro. Miro is slick. Miro is really slick. And if you happen to look at the torrents, specifically TVRSS, you can plug that torrent right into Miro, and it'll automatically download the new show once the torrent is active. So, not that I've done that before.
In theory.
Got preference that. You know. But.
I gotta definitely check that out.
It wouldn't be that difficult. I mean, you just go over to, you sign up for a boxy account, you go over to their developer section, and there's a wiki for developing applications.
Yep.
You got a boxy Python API listed right there. There you go.
Hey, Pat knows Python. We should have him write it.
Looks very
simple. Yeah.
Well,
put Rowan Golfer's awesome artwork too on it. From the I think that would be cool. That way we'd be on the boxy box when it comes out.
You
that
run
would be
boxy,
neat.
You said, Tara, you said you run boxy on your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that good?
Yeah.
Works great, I think.
Yeah.
System requirements said 0.5 gig of RAM and a 1 gigahertz processor.
When I just load things, I really don't just pay attention to that stuff, although I don't run a lot of things at once, but no, it's running great.
I'll have to try it out. Maybe I'll install it on my Myth TV box, too, if it works good. You know what I found out the other day? When I was playing around with Hulu, that expanding the Hulu video to the full screen really destroys it. causes jitters and everything. When you shrink it down to a more smaller size, it seems to work a whole lot better. The only downside is that you got like a widescreen television, and you have like your computer desktop all around this whole thing of a little video showing your. It's like watching the show you want to watch on a 14-inch television, embedded into a widescreen, like what a, like a 26-inch television. It's like not. It might as well just be black and white at that point.
Just sound.
I don't run the Hulu desktop client when I want to watch it. I just run it in the browser. I think it runs better.
No.
To be brutally honest.
You know what, again, I still have to give props to AnimeFreak.tv because every anime show that we watch on there runs full screen on the widescreen television flawlessly. Sometimes you can even get 16:9 format. Runs flawlessly, never a problem. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wonder why, though. It doesn't make sense.
You know, one of the things that I would speculate is that animation may not have as much.
I don't think you're running at full 30 frames a second with animation.
Right.
Yeah, you might not have as much frame changing. But still, I mean, they cannot only deliver the content, they have like gazillions of shows on there. Like every show I'd ever want to watch, the entire back catalog in 15 different languages with or without subtitles for free. I can watch it. I can watch anime until my head explodes. But goodness gracious, I try
your head
explodes. Yeah, I try and get a season of Lost on the web, and they'll show me like
forget
three
it.
Episodes from season 3. But if I want to see all of them, oh no,
you have to pay.
Yeah, I gotta go out and pay. Who's paying for those little poor Korean
or
kids that have to draw that anime? You know what, Tara? I'm still burned about the whole electronic book thing. I don't know why you brought that up.
Well, the electronic what?
The electronic book thing.
Oh,
like,
sorry.
I want Core Python. Core Python programming. Second edition. I can't buy it in electronic format unless I have a Kindle.
I don't want to talk about it.
You know what? I can get it for free, though. I can download it for free off the torrent sites. Not even a torrent site. All I have to do is just wait 30 seconds. Because I don't want to sign up for a paid subscription service. Some downloading
crap.
Yeah,
like Usenet.
Well,
I have a friend at work who paid for Usenet access. Seriously.
Well, did he do that because he wanted Usenet access and that there was no other way that he could get it?
He did that so he can get all the binary groups.
Oh.
Which a lot of ISPs won't carry anymore. What's the name of that book, Core Python?
Core Python Programming.
I want to see what the price is.
You can get it off of Amazon for like $30.
I might already have it on my wish list. Cause that to me the e-readers, it's $34.01. Actually, that's the one from Prentice Hall by Wesley Chun.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the only one that came up.
Yeah, Python Programming.
Yeah, .2e. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can buy it electronic. And I've gone to the Core Python Programming website, and you know, you want to download the electronic version, they send you the Safari subscription, and then you got to pay like $19 a month or something, or $15. And
let's see.
Hey, Safari, don't get me wrong, Safari's great, but
yeah, I like Safari. I can do all that for free since I work for a college.
Now, does your Safari subscription allow you to pull books in and out of your bookshelf? Like anytime?
No, I have to read it online.
Well, no, what I mean is, like, the way Safari works for, like, a standard subscription is you get, like, a 5-slot bookshelf, and you could put, like, up to 5 books in there, but when you put a book in, it has to stay in your slot for, like, 30 days before you can remove it. Do you have that restriction on the one from the college?
No, I can view any book I want whenever I want and wherever I want. I don't even have to be on campus. On campus, it's easier. Off campus, I actually have to log in. But once I'm in there, I can view it. The only thing I can do is I can only view it online. I can't actually download it like to my Kindle or in a PDF format. But that's all I can do.
Yeah,
it's slick though. I
like
it.
About the Safari is, it is good, but you know, it's like you're it's one. I don't know. Sometimes the formatting is a little iffy on the web page of the Safari. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Plus, trying to find something in the book too is kind of easy.
I got a song. How about that, Alan?
Well, that's cool.
Alan.
Well, sometimes before we go, we should thank our guests for coming on.
Oh, okay.
Tara, I want to thank you for coming on.
Absolutely.
Been awesome.
Thanks for having me,
you've been
guys.
An amazing guest. We really enjoyed it. Are you going to be at the Southeast Linux Fest?
Yeah, I am.
Who is
you
it?
Personally?
In the flesh.
Oh,
who
well,
is it?
I'm probably not.
Well, we look forward to seeing you there, and you're lucky because Joel won't be there. Dave Yates, would you like to say anything?
Thanks, Tara, for coming on the show.
Dave, thanks for having me. And if you guys need to get a hold of
probably,
me...
I was going to say, that's the most Dave talked all show.
registration for the Southeast Linux Fest is open now. It took us longer than I thought it would, but it is open. You can register today.
That's awesome.
Now, Tara, you were about to tell us if we need to get a hold of you, we could do what?
Skype Tara Spaulding. Actually, my email address is even on the website, so if you go to TWOS.com, I'm out there, no problem. So if there's anything I can do to help out, just contact me. I'm around.
Awesome. Well, we thank you very
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Tara.
Thanks,
awesome
you guys.
Time.
Have a lovely evening.
Thanks, Charles. Great
you
having you on the show.
Thank you.
Yes, it was. Very Thanks. Interesting subject. Thank you. Yay! What do we got to play tonight, Dan?
Oh, now that you're ready, the rest of us should bow down before Lord Gorkon. Dave, I have a question for you.
Okie doke.
If I sign up like Southeast Linux Fest and then I say, well, you know, maybe I want to change my registration and get a supporter package when I have money. Can I change my registration options later on?
Probably. I would, I don't know if you could go backwards and say, you know, you give us the supporter package and then say, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't think we could do that, but the other way around, I think we could do that. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And to answer another question that I raised last week, I got a follow-up email when I asked for clarification regarding the options that were presented to me for presenting at Southeast Linux Fest, and I misunderstood the email, and Jeremy cleared it up for me, and it made perfect sense then, and he's doing a great job.
Yes, he is. Well, I'm glad that got cleared up for you, too.
I don't know if I ever responded to him, which I probably should.
Yeah, it might help.
I gotta clarify. No, I think I did. I think I told him I want an hour talk.
Just an hour.
Yeah, I don't want a 2-hour talk. I don't know. The thing that's got me a little worried is Saturday.
Saturday.
Saturday thing.
You mean,
yeah, I mean,
you mean
the
Sunday?
Sunday. The Sunday, yeah. Because I'm man, I'm going to have to take off 2 days to go to Southeast Linux Fest this year.
It'll be worth it. There'll be a lot to do on Sunday. There's going to be a Drupal camp on Sunday as well.
This isn't at a university, so there's not going to be all those, you know, beautiful women walking around. And I hope there's a place for me to pass out the next morning.
Oh, there he is.
A horrible hangover from drinking.
This would be the nicest hotel you've ever passed out in, too, probably.
Good. All right. Excellent. All right. I guess with that, gentlemen, I have a song to play us out. It's called Obscure Terrain from Revolution Void off the album Increase the Dosage. Did I ever play this?
No.
No,
I don't know.
It is?
Yeah, it's not bad. I played a couple of songs. I don't know if I've heard this one.
Would you like to know?
I'm going to play this. Of course, again, you guys aren't going to hear a damn thing because Alan didn't hook up. And work this out.
You didn't drive down to Virginia and fix your problem.
All Alan's fault.
And again, I don't...
You know what Alan needs? Alan needs GoToMeeting.
Yeah, but the problem is that doesn't help me look at the mixing board.
You know what, Alan, I'm almost positive. I don't think it's a mixing board.
It's a webcam.
I think it's a sound card we're using.
It could very possibly be that, yes.
I think it's one of these. It's a cheap sound card, and it seems to work better than the Sound Blaster did, but has its own little idiosyncrasies and issues. Anyway, Wake, are
Find
you
one
still
of those
on?
IMAX on like the or the.
He had to go pee.
Not
That's
the
a
IMAX,
long time
little,
he's been peeing.
The little USB sound card.
He wanted to say bye bye.
Nick had to pee.
I registered myself there, Dave Yates, so you should be happy.
What?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, you registered, okay.
For self.
Well, if you were going to, if you could plan on speaking, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
You hope?
What do you mean, I hope? Hope what?
Registering would probably be a good idea if you are speaking, yes.
Yeah.
I'm speaking, should know I'm come registered then. Shouldn't have to waste my time.
They should pay your way, right, Dan?
That's right, they should come pick me up. And on the way, pick Chad up, too. Yes. All right, the gentlemen, here we go. I'm playing us out. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Night, night.
Next week, we don't have a guest, do we? Pat, do we have a guest next week? Well, hold on a second there, Dan.
I actually think we do.
Do we have a guest
next
week?
Hold on, let me look. I thought we did. Is it just us? Oh, darn.
Just us. Oh, wait, I lost where we were.
That's okay. We have fun.
Wait a minute. I thought we had, Wait, something's not right here. That is not true. Actually, I wanted to bring this up to Link. Because I had put in a guest. You there, Link?
Yeah, I'm right here.
All right, I had put in a guest through the Google Calendar, and I noticed it didn't show up.
Let me see.
For next week.
Possibly you didn't save it?
That would be, like, classic, Dan.
Well, what happened to it? I did put it in.
Did you save it?
Yeah, I did. It was showing up on my calendar. Alright, you know what? I don't want to hear anything.
It's
more
not
about
a coding
it.
Thing, man. I mean, it's the API is just Google Calendar. Like, if you put it in.
Yeah, I know. But I.
If you figure out who it is, I can put it in for you, Dan.
No.
If you're not coordinated or not.
Yeah, that's easy to put in. What happened? I thought it was.
Now that you mentioned it, I think you did.
What?
I said. Now that you mentioned it, I think you're right.
That I what?
Yeah. Could it be that you put yours in and somebody else overrode it with the just us thing? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. Dave, go ahead. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I don't even know what I'm going to say. I can look it up, though. I think you sent an email about it.
Yeah, I know I did. It's from Frostbite Systems, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
But I can't find the email now.
I think I might have it, actually.
And I just sent him... I just did this the other day.
The BITE or BYTE?
BITE.
Well, I just updated the calendar. It worked just fine.
Jonathan. And actually, okay, it's not next week. It's next week. It's the week after. It's February 17th. Next week is just us.
Yeah, hold on here. I'll put it in there.
No, the 17th is not next week. Yeah, it's the 10th. 10th is next week. The 10th is just us, and 17th is Jonathan.
Yeah.
From Frostbite Systems.
Well, I got the 10th.
Yeah. The 10th is just us. See, carrying up business right on the show. We're organized. PyCon right. Also starts on the 17th.
There's a song.
See, okay, is it showing up now?
No.
It's not showing up.
Nope.
For the 17th?
Yeah.
Yes,
nope.
It's there.
Okay, it's there.
But let me refresh.
Frostbite Systems. It's there.
Yep, it's there.
Why are you
it's
telling me
now,
Joel?
Yep. Because it wasn't right. For me. Because right. There, it's there now.
Joel is just there, like pissing so in your iced tea, man. That's what it
is. He is, man.
That's right.
His F5 button doesn't work.
Here's the song, Revolution Void.
Not.
What?
Thanks, Dave. I love you, too.
I said not night.
All right, finally. Good night.
Night, everybody.
Good night.
Night, John boy.
Thanks for listening. Nighty night.
Whether you've only heard of Linux or if you're an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2010, Scale has expanded to 5 speaker tracks. The expo now includes a beginner's track for those new to Linux and a developer's track for the coders out there. Scale will have over 50 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source, and the expo floor will have over 80 booths, with both commercial and nonprofit organizations showing off their products and software. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 19th, 20th, and 21st, 2010, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit SoCalLinuxExpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration. We'll see you at Scale AX.
About the new search of computers?
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's Deep Geek. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.
No way.
Yeah.
Hey. Are we on Shoutcast?
I don't think so.
I was looking through the Moxie, and there is a Shoutcast application already. So
just emulate that and point it to our server.
Yeah, really. That would be easy, you would think. In fact, I'm actually going to put that on there. Actually, you probably could cut out a lot of the crust, too, because you'd only have to have the one stream.
Yeah, that's true. Rip them off!
And all the other navigation. Rip off. Radio Time is the other plugin that I like to use. That's a nifty one. You can listen to you're not just stuck to AM FM. You can also listen to like Police Band and stuff like that.
Wait a second. Alright, I'm gonna pack this puppy up and ship it on out.
Yay.
Change.
I don't know.
Why did my input change? I was only
trying to get your mids on.
But now I have two inputs too. Tell me why did my input change? It hurts.
You're funny.
Why did
your input hurts?
My input changed, and now it hurts. Why did my input change? Why did Joel try to make it feel so strange? He called me on my telephone and said, let me suck on your big combo. Cause Joel likes men, and that's okay, unless he goes into the military.
Shut up, man. You're screwed up, man.
Then he has to lie.
That boy ain't right.
True intentions. That's okay. That's okay, they say. That is okay.
Joel, you are loud.
To be gay.
I am loud.
Like Joel.
A little bit.
Let me turn the game down just a hair.
He is gay. Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Not too bad.
Speaking of gay, look who's in the back there. Screaming up in the background. Looks like he's hollering through Joel's ass.
Hello? Hello? Is
that better?
Nobody is in Joel's
I'll let you know. I'm listening
on
the stream.
Nobody else is in there but you, pal. You know what?
I'm a little closer to the mic.
It's dark in here.
We gotta postpone your party. What's it
smell
like?
Winter Storm Watch here.
It smells like
we even have Winter Storm Watch.
I figured it'd be a good idea, Dan, because it's supposed to be worse out your way, so you would be driving through, 2 feet of snow to get here to drive through a foot of snow.
Damn.
Only a foot.
Only a foot?
Yeah, we got 6 inches of snow. It shut down the whole town for 5 days. Kids haven't had school. Since last week.
Where?
Wow.
Yeah. Not even 6 inches of snow, and it was all gone by, like, Monday.
So are you guys supposed to get hit there in Virginia by this thing, too?
I don't know.
We are.
I didn't even know that. You're not in Virginia, dickwipe.
Because, like, I was just watching the Weather Channel or the news when I got home from work today, and they're talking about, in Baltimore, they're talking about 20 inches of snow.
Wow. It rarely snows here, though. Like, this is the most amount of snow we've gotten in 20 years.
Well, I would expect to see some more here this weekend.
I believe they are supposed to get snow again this weekend.
Yep. Poor Dan.
Well, not so bad.
Can't go to work.
He knows how to drive it. The rest of the Virginians.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not.
That's true. How many numbnuts hit the wall because they try and drive too fast in Virginia?
Yeah.
Claudio, those are some cool pictures on Facebook, man.
Or have something to eat on the weekend.
Now we got rain all week.
Rain. So it all melted.
There we go. No. I mean, we don't have a snowstorm coming in. We have rain. We have a rainstorm.
Oh, well, that's
yeah,
good.
Most of the snow's already melted.
All our snow melted and then it came again. But we don't have that much now. But we got a winter storm watch Friday through Saturday. It must be a big storm for it to hit Pennsylvania and Ohio.
Well, it's supposed to be a nor'easter. Supposed to be blizzard conditions and in some cases almost whiteout conditions, I guess.
We'll be on the edge of that stuff, so we won't get too
much.
Which,
of course, means that since I have canceled my party, we won't get anything.
I was going to say, we won't get anything then.
Probably. Link's going to be 40.
No,
holy crap.
The party, didn't you get the email?
Yeah, I did, but it's not like I'm going in the first place.
I canceled the party, so I'm
wish
not
I could.
40.
Yeah.
It's over.
Actually, I just looked this up on AccuWeather. Over here in Columbus, they're calling for 3 to 6 Friday with an additional 1 to 3 Friday night. So we're going to get like 8 inches.
Lizard.
That's going to get freaking cold again. Oh. 13 degrees on Sunday night. Ugh.
Blizzard. Cha-cha-cha. Blizzard.
Diarrhea. Cha-cha-cha.
Well, that's odd. I just fired up Twitter and it obviously didn't load all the CSS. It's all one line.
Anybody try out the new Gwibber yet?
No. Nope. I didn't even know there was a new Gwibber.
Yeah, well, I've been running the daily.
I already know that.
Yeah. I've been running the dailies, and, well, I'm not updating at least till tomorrow, because I updated my one, my workstation at work, and it kind of crashed, so, they must be working hard on it, but they really changed the, interface. It's much improved. Much improved.
It's nice and warm here in Joel's ass, I have to,
You sound like you're in my ass.
Watch out for
actually,
the white stuff on
good.
The walls.
Yeah.
That's the white stuff!
That means that Dan's been there.
No. No, Link. It's green stuff on the walls for Dan. Green stuff on the walls for Dan.
Oh, come on. Like, we all haven't taken a try in there, huh?
Wow.
Remember when Pat got stuck?
In your ass?
In your ass, Joel. We're talking about your ass. Dave Yates at OLF last year, Dave Yates had to crawl in and rescue him.
Yep.
Alright, did Dan just...
I didn't know E-Machines made a netbook.
What do you mean, did I just drop off? Did I just drop off?
Oh, no, I guess not.
Oh.
I thought you did, but...
No.
Maybe it was just me.
Well, that sounds like Link dropped off. Oh.
I'm still here.
No, it is just you.
Am I still here?
It is just you.
I think I am still here.
Yes, you're still here. Dude, man. I just had a...
Just everybody
awesome
was, like, rapping, chatting and stuff, and
dude.
It's nothing, so...
Don't call me dude.
Don't call me Alan.
Dude.
My sphincter.
So, would you like to know?
I'm looking at the TLLTS microblog, right? And Claudio M. is talking about having chicken, rice, veggies, and Guinness beer prepping for the show tonight. And I think
you should send you some.
Three. Yeah, that's that is.
Yep. Hey, hello, y'all.
Yo, with that name.
Hey, it's Dave 68.
Thank you.
Power glide on it.
Showtime. It's a little thing.
She's in a conference room by herself. I gave her the number, but I don't know how she's supposed to get in. I guess she called me.
Hold
she connected.
She's in a conference room?
She dialed the number. Yeah, she dialed the number, hit 2.
Alright, hold on.
Put it in the old conference room.
Let me see if I can, let me transfer her
over.
Oh my God, that man has one leg.
Over the rainbow.
Luke says hi, guys. I'm back in my studio.
Not yet, Luke, but we're working on it.
Yeah.
Come here.
Hi.
Say hi.
Dan, if you can't transfer her, I can call her.
Why don't you give me a second, pal?
He is your father.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Okay.
Say hi, Link.
You're so intimidating, Dan.
Hi, Luke.
Hi.
Oh, wait a minute.
How you doing, Luke?
Somebody.
I want you to do me a favor, buddy. While your dad's trying to do a show tonight, I want you to run around his desk and scream and jump up and down and make all kinds of noise.
You thought that was funny, and I did too. I thought it was pretty funny.
Hey, you guys. It's Tara Spaulding.
Ah, look at that.
Hey.
First time, got it right in, no problem, Dave. And you doubted me, pal. You doubted me.
I didn't doubt you. I was just getting impatient.
You doubted me all the way.
Cylinders of open source.
Now, what was the bet? I need to know.
No, actually, I doubted you, Dan. I always
you don't know my
him.
Italian persistence yet. You soon shall.
Good evening.
How you doing, Tara?
Go back to my...
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Go to the
Somebody didn't learn the mute button yet.
All right.
For all the parents that are participating on this, we all get it.
Oh, yeah. We have had Luke on the show many times before. We really get it, trust us.
Too many times. Too many times. Mute button on this thing and...
Watch the way you say that.
Yes. It is a big microphone, though. I love it. The Blue Yeti. I got the same microphone as the Randall Schwartz. So I don't feel special though.
We've not started yet, right? I mean, Tara may be feeling lost.
I don't even know what time it is.
It's 8:29.
No, we didn't start yet. You know what, Joel? You should send one of your $1 million mics to 330 who can't afford a mic.
Nah.
Nah. That's good old Christian spirit for you there, huh? Joel, good job.
Well, see, I have a mic I could send him. I do have a mic I could send him.
I love you, Joel. That's great, man.
Yeah.
All those passages, and the answer is no.
We should send 330 a care package. Nah.
I could send him my old headset. That would probably be better than what he uses right now.
Why don't you send him a pair of scissors, man? He needs a freaking haircut.
He does, man. He's a hippie.
Haircut, man. You need a haircut, you hippie, if you're going to be posting your ugly
I'm
mug on
the
internet like
my feelings check.
With stickers that say, I am Fedora.
Yeah, that's right. You don't look like a Fedora. You look like,
in Austin, Texas. Go to TexasLinux.org for details. And remember...
He needs a haircut, but he needs to keep that beard, right?
Yes.
Administration beard.
Well, if he shaves it, I don't know what he's going to look like.
I really
Speaking
wish
of
I could
system administration,
one.
That's what groundwork does. Tara, do you have a beard?
I don't know. Hope not.
God, if I did, I don't think my husband would be too happy with that.
Tara? Ah, she does. She forgot to turn the mute on.
Right? You may not have one, but it's implied.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a system administration.
An implied beard.
You have to have
now, who during Christmas said that they got a whole bunch of Nagios alerts as their Christmas present? Because that was pretty funny.
That would be Link.
No, that was me.
Nice.
Oh, was it you? Okay.
Oh, so it was a group gift.
Yeah,
he gets the alerts on my Nagio server. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving, like, every day.
Every 5 minutes, huh?
I used to complain because they were false alarms, but now, more often than not,
yeah,
they seem to
now
be
they're
legitimate.
Real. Yeah, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, it sucks when you
have Nagios
now so that I can
can't
have a report
it.
About how often my server goes down, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. You turned off the emails?
Oh, no, I still get
What good
those.
Is an email if my server's down?
Yep,
I'm not
going to
get it.
What good's an email if your... What good's an email is if your email server's down?
Well, no, I get emails when Dan's server goes down, and Dan gets pages. Now, and for some reason, it doesn't work the other way around. Like, I get pages when my servers go down, but Dan doesn't get emails about it because he doesn't care.
So. He just doesn't read your email.
Dan, like, that's right. No, he's like 330. He sends it all to the spam bucket.
When your servers go down, I never get emails that your server goes down.
I don't care. I don't have it sending to you.
You're not on the need to know area.
Yeah. He's an uncaring bastard, you know, really. Just doesn't care.
Why do you think your servers are down?
That's obvious. We all went, well, I'm not going to go there right now.
Why does my server go down right now? Because it's running on VMware. That's why.
I log in and I shut it down for you because I don't want you to spend it.
You know what? All of this, now that you mention it, all of this crap did start happening after I gave you an account on my box. And I'm going to have to go check that out now.
There you go. Dave's got a cron job that does it every 5 minutes, huh?
It's not every 5 minutes. Usually like 2:30 in the morning, you know.
Yeah, that's
what it
runs.
Yeah.
It's a random time between 2 and 2:30.
Yeah, there you
go. Between 2 and 3:30, to make it relevant. You know, are we ready to start? Because Tara didn't come on here to hear us yell at each other. She got important business to talk about.
But it's fun though.
We still don't have the audio feeding back through properly, because Alan didn't contact
Great.
Me this week.
I know. Well, we're gonna take a road trip down there, Dan, to fix it right.
Say it isn't so.
Yeah. I'm going to start us off. You won't hear a thing because it just decides not to. And
it lets mute.
And then we'll get right into it, Tara, okay?
Sweet.
All right, so... I'm going to count us down, and we'll be good to go.